Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Liz Benjamin. Liz has been the host of Capital Tonight on YNN since April of 2011, and she spearheads Capital Tonight's blog, State of Politics, which is a must-read for everybody who wants to know about state government. Liz joined the Capital Press Corps as a reporter for the Albany Times-Union in 1997 and launched that paper's Capital Confidential blog in 2007. She joined the New York Daily News, taking over primary responsibility for their blog, The Daily Politics, under Liz's leadership. Both became must-reads for Capital insiders as well as other political reporters. Welcome, Liz Benjamin.
Thank you. That was quite an introduction.
Well, do I have to add to that that I knew you since you were in a blue blanket as a tiny little baby?
It was blue. We were very...
No, it was pink. You make a good point. Always the great reporter.
There you go.
Okay. So, Liz, you know more about this than anybody I know. Let's talk about the women's agenda to begin with. Andrew Cuomo comes up with a women's agenda. Maybe he read the election returns from the last election, maybe not. A 10-point program, one of which involved codifying the Roe versus Wade dicta for New York State. So he couldn't get that through. But the others, there was sort of a double, triple, quadruple fake out. Maybe you could explain it all to us.
Wow. Well, okay. It started with the State of the State address that the governor gave in January. Sort of the real hallmark signature of that, the takeaway, was the women's equality agenda. And he said it was going to be 10 points, as you mentioned. And he also said, let's pass the Reproductive Health Act at the time. Those were his exact words. We have it on tape. It was definitely said. And he even had like a little video, and there was a boy baby, and speaking of blankets, and a girl baby. And it was like, you know, these two are born in equality, but one makes more money than the other, and one has fewer protections than the other, and why it's just because of the sex of the children, and we should change that, something along those lines. So the room went wild, and I think that he was strident in his message. He was very aggressive in the message. And then subsequently, he didn't propose anything. There was no legislation. And that allowed the opponents to seize on his words and take the Reproductive Health Act, which was actually introduced by Eliot Spitzer when he was first governor, and that was in 2007, and actually did expand abortion rights in New York State and was something that the right really opposed, including the Catholic Church. And they seized on those words and started beating the bushes and screaming about their opposition and riling the grassroots. And the proponents, which would be the women's advocates, the women's rights advocates, were sort of in a bind because they were protecting and championing something that the governor had not actually proposed. He just said he was going to propose it. So there was no legislation from the governor. And he then met with the bishops and said to the bishops, I know you're upset. Reportedly, the bishops came out of the meeting. We weren't in the meeting. And they said, this is what the governor said to us. I know you're upset, but you haven't seen my legislation yet. It's not the RHA. Well, then what is it? Nobody knew. He took the Reproductive Health Act. Yeah. So it took a long time for the governor to finally put the legislation out. Now, he had said sort of broadly during this session, because people were saying, where's the bill? Where's the bill? Where's the bill? And he said, well, you know, it's better to negotiate the details and then put out the agreed upon language. And if I put out bills that are not agreed upon, then you know that that bill has very little chance of passing. So that's not transparency, and it's kind of actually not even democracy, if you think about it. And he subsequently walked that back and said, well, I was just joking, and you reporters don't really even understand my humor, so it's your fault. He did, in fact, put out the legislation for the Women's Equality Act. It was, in fact, 10 points. But by that time, the opponents had had so much opportunity to really build their case against this amorphous thing and make everyone frightened and say, it's going to be partial birth, which, of course, is banned at the federal level, or it's going to dramatically expand abortion rights when New York actually is the capital of abortion in the nation, or, you know, whatever it is that they said that was wrong, some of it, just flat out wrong, but terrified people and really got the grassroots on the conservative side upset. And it really left the advocates on the women's rights side in a little bit of a bind. They did create a huge coalition. They did fight and try and get the governor's agenda passed. In the end, the governor did say, I want all 10 points or nothing. Throughout it all, the Senate Republicans were quite clear. They were not going to do anything that had anything to do with abortion. Why? Because they had given away so much already. They had already done the SAFE Act, which really came back to bite them because
the gun,
it's
the gun act.
It's all right. It's because people are already terrified and upset, and it's being litigated in court, and they're demonstrating on the Capitol lawn. And
two of their guys lost primaries as a result of
the gay marriage bill.
Of the gay marriage bill.
Right. So the Republicans are already sort of on the edge because also they struck this unholy deal with the five breakaway, now four breakaway Democrats in the Senate. And that upset. Well, hold on. That's the Independent Democratic Conference. And that upset a lot of the people on the right who said, what are you doing? Because Jeff Klein, who's the leader of that Independent Democratic Conference, said the reason why we're doing this instead of going back home with our fellow Democrats, the reason why we're keeping the Republicans in power like this is so we can have progressive pieces of legislation passed. And we think that the Democrats that we used to belong to are so dysfunctional and can't get anything accomplished that the Republicans are a better bet. We'll have a better chance of getting progressive, quote unquote, legislation through with the GOP than we would with our fellow Democrats. And that's why Jeff Klein said, I'm doing this hybrid, weird, double-headed hydra of a coalition in the state Senate.
That's what he said, but a lot of people suspect what he meant was, I want to be the leader or nothing at all,
that's
and so
correct.
Therefore I'm going to make this deal with
that's
the Republicans.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. So he was really also in a bind because the women, when the bill finally came out and the governor said all 10 points or nothing, and the Senate Republicans said, well, we like 9 points, which is a little bit of a red herring, by the way, because those bills had been floating around for a while. Equal pay, sexual harassment, which we'll get back to, you know, domestic violence, sex trafficking. I mean, these things had been strengthening the laws, preventing these things and protecting women, et cetera, had been floating around in bill form for quite some time. If they loved them so much, they could have just passed them as individual pieces of legislation. So now they say, we love the 9, we won't do the 10th, no abortion for you, forget it, right? That's what they said to the governor. And he pushed it very hard, and they accused him, as you alluded to, of having a political agenda because they said abortion rights are not in danger in New York. And if you look at the makeup of the U.S. Supreme Court, Barack Obama is still, you know, president, and you may have thoughts about, you know, he's a lame duck and he's having some trouble, et cetera, but he's still in control when it comes to U.S. Supreme Court appointees. And Roe is probably not in danger at this moment. Now, it's true that the House Republicans in D.C. just passed an abortion ban, and they have been very anti-choice, if you will, or anti-abortion rights. But the Senate at this moment remains in Democratic hands, and we still have a Democrat in the White House. So at this point, Roe doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Abortion rights seem fairly safe. So why do we need this big push for women? Well, maybe it's because a woman might run for president in 2016. Maybe, one could say. That's what the Republicans accused Cuomo of doing, as you alluded to. Fine. So that's where we were. 10 points or nothing, says the governor. 9 points or forget it, said the Senate Republicans. And then all of a sudden, with about a week remaining in the session, the governor broke the 10-piece omnibus bill into 10 separate pieces after saying that he would not, and then called on them to actually have a vote in the Senate because no vote would indicate that you actually were not choice, pro-choice. In other words, Senate Republicans, tell voters where you stand, because some of you say that you're pro-choice, but you're never willing to take any votes or rarely willing to take any votes that indicates that. So they fought about it. The Assembly Democrats passed the omnibus bill. They didn't want to pass
all 10 points.
All 10 points.
Right.
And they didn't want to pass, you know, each bill in its sort of individual piece. Why? Well, they claimed that they had accepted watered down pieces of legislation that they had already passed. Individual pieces, the pay equity piece, for example, the domestic violence piece. But some people said it was really because Shelley Silver, who's the Speaker of the Assembly, didn't want to give the Republicans any more opportunity to hammer him on the Assembly floor during debate for passing a sexual harassment protection bill when he is under scrutiny and being sued, actually, for his mishandling of a sexual harassment case in his own house. So there's a problem in the Assembly. That's where that is. So they passed the whole enchilada. Then the Senate says, well, we're not going to pass the whole enchilada. The IDC, who we referenced before, that's Jeff Klein, now they're under a lot of pressure because he said at one point, you're not a true Democrat if you're not pro-choice. Well, they said, great. Well, you're in charge every other day. You bring the bill to the floor. He said, I can't do that. I'm in agreement with Dean Skelos. I mean, he could have ostensibly maybe procedurally done that, but he would have broken up the band. I mean, that would have been the end of his GOP coalition. And he wasn't prepared to do that. So what does he do instead? He tried to force the issue with a hostile amendment, which is an amendment that is attached to another piece of legislation that is on the floor, right? So there's a bill on the floor. It may or may not be related to abortion. And you try and attach a hostile amendment to it, and then you vote on whether or not the amendment's germane. He did that at a time when one of his allies, a fellow IDC member, Senator Dianne Savino, who had sponsored the abortion bill in her house, was presiding over the Senate. So she, of course, ruled it germane. Then they had a vote. It was not ruled germane. It lost because, in part, a Senate Democrat named Ruben Diaz, who is very conservative and a Pentecostal minister, stood up and railed against it and essentially said that abortionists are trying to make money off the Black and Latino population because the abortion rate among minorities is so high. He's very conservative. Everyone knows he's anti-abortion rights. That's his thing. No surprise there. Anyway, the amendment failed. So where does this leave us? We could go on about all these little points forever. The Women's Equality Act died because one house passed nine versions, right? Nine separate bills. That was the Senate. One house passed the omnibus bill, all 10 points together. And you need to have matching legislation from both houses go to the governor for a signature. That's how you get a deal in Albany. And it didn't happen.
The Republicans are between a rock and a hard place, it seems to me. They come out of an election in which Obama wins. And when they add up all the votes and the political analysts do their things, they find out that women voted overwhelmingly for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. The Republicans know it. But on the other hand, they saw, as you indicated before, from the gay marriage bill, that people could lose in very conservative constituencies. And they didn't want that to happen. Now you have Mike Long, the chairman of the Conservative Party, coming out. What does he say? He says anybody who votes pro-abortion, pro-women's rights on this issue, right to choose, is going to get a primary. And they get scared.
Mm-hmm. True.
So they don't know what to do.
Well, I think they actually know very well what to do. What they did was not put an abortion bill on the floor.
But they could get hurt.
Well, you know, it really depends. I mean, the 2014 elections are not, no election cycle is the same.
Sure.
So the 2014 elections won't be the 2012 elections.
No.
What do we have? We have Obama not at the top of the ticket. He's a lame duck. He's very concerned about the midterms. Midterms usually don't go well for the incumbent president, right? I mean, we already saw that. That's when the House went from Democratic control to Republican control. Not a big surprise. So you have a lame duck president who's pretty unpopular, who's mired in several scandals. There's a lot of problems. That's at the federal level. So that's what's going on. You've got members of Congress will be on the ballot. But the highest profile race here in New York will be Andrew Cuomo. It'll be his first re-election campaign. He'll have dramatically more money than anybody else. He'll have at least one constitutional amendment on the ballot, which will be the casino amendment. Actually, there'll be more than that, because at least another one, there's a Assemblyman Tedisco has a bill that would let the legislature go paperless, saving taxpayers millions of dollars. So that'll also be on there. So there's public referenda that are out there, right? So those are important too. But the governor will be sort of the top marquee race, and he doesn't really have a top marquee challenger at this point. The person who is talking right now about challenging him is this guy, Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin. He's a conservative darling. And
it is also a who he, as we say.
Right. You could say that. I mean, he's a Capital Region Republican. He's very outspoken. He also once compared the governor to Hitler and Mussolini, if I remember correctly.
I apologize for that.
He did. And but it was in conjunction with the way that the SAFE Act, that gun control bill, was passed, which was really rammed down the legislature's throats. And it was done in a pretty ugly way. Really, one could argue, you know, circumventing democracy again, small d democracy, the same way that other controversial bills were passed, like Tier 6, like the same-sex marriage bill.
Tier 6 being the pension bill,
right. So this is a way that the governor sort of micromanages the process to stymie controversy and opposition and get the legislature to move quickly on controversial matters. So that it's not a secret.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you about this because, Liz Benjamin, because there is this question of sometimes politicians want the issue more than they actually want to see something passed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, that's been an accusation used against Cuomo again and again. I wonder what your insights on that might be.
Well, I mean, certainly that has been an allegation made in the case of women's equality.
Mm-hmm.
It has also just this week, the Syracuse Post-Standard sort of accused him of doing that where it came to the anti-corruption bills that he put forward, because he didn't really push terribly hard. Maybe what he really wanted to do was this Moreland Act commission that would investigate the State Board of Elections and then from there also investigate lawmakers and their campaign finance practices, which, of course, his father did in 1987 with a Moreland Act commission that came to be known as the Ferrick Commission. So maybe he really wanted that because he wants to reignite his mantle of the cleanup king of Albany, the white knight of, you know, State Street, etc. Maybe that was more important to him than actually getting deals. I don't know. I'm not inside the governor's head, nor have I spoken to him about this anytime soon or in the recent past. Also, there was an accusation, similar accusation made regarding campaign finance reform, which was part and parcel of his anti-corruption package. The advocates hit him very hard, pressured for a public campaign finance system that would be a taxpayer-funded, ostensibly taxpayer or some other way funded system in which large dollar donations are curbed and the power of a big money is reduced in politics. That's a system similar to one that exists in a number of states, but also in New York City.
But how much money does he have in his campaign?
Over $20 million.
Over $20 million.
Right.
So there are those who say, well, you've got $20 million, but you're arguing for campaign financing, so that maybe you should have fought harder for this.
Well, he has been talking about his support for public campaign financing since he was a candidate in 2010. And he gave it sort of mention in the State of the State 1, State of the State 2, and State of the State 3. He didn't push terribly hard for it last year, even though he said to advocates, this is the time because of Citizens United and because of the disgust at the national level with all the money and the super PACs, et cetera. And people are really, it's time, right? But if you poll people and you give them just the most generic poll and you say, what issues are most important to you? Campaign finance reform ain't one of them. It's taxes, jobs, and the economy, right? That's what people really care about. And then maybe education and healthcare and, you know, law enforcement, protection, anti-terrorism, et cetera. If you ask them a pointed question, do you think battling corruption and cleaning up Albany in the wake of a whole bunch of scandals that Preet Bharara and Loretta Lynch have you know, brought cases in this year, is that the most important thing? Then they say yes. Or if you give them 10 items, maybe they might put that one near the top. But honestly, he's not a dope. He reads the polls. And hence, that's why Startup New York, which used to be Tax-Free New York, which is this economic development proposal, is his top victory, if you will, that he's touting all over the state after this session. Not, I don't know, anything else that he got, which would be like LIPA reform, for example, the Long Island Power Authority reform, was also a victory, certainly for the people in Long Island, one would argue. But what he's really touting, and not casinos either, which ostensibly, given, I don't know how you feel about gambling, but would ostensibly help the upstate economy. Nope, it's this economic development plan, which gives people who co-locate with SUNY and maybe in empty state property, and you have to be eligible. It's a little bit technical, but you up to 10 years of property tax and no income tax for the people who work for you. Now, some people felt that was unfair, a huge giveaway, because there are lots of businesses that have been paying through the nose because this is a very high tax state. So they really bled for years. And now they're saying, wait, what? You're going to give away the store to other businesses and what's going to happen to me? Oh, well, it's going to help communities because it's going to build the economic development. One tide rises all boats, right? Economic development comes in and that improves the economy locally. And you as business that have been established already also benefit ostensibly. Yeah, but I'm still paying taxes.
And I'm paying more taxes because you're letting other people off the hook.
Well, right. Eventually they will phase in. It was supposed to be just upstate, but
10 years from now, he's not going to be governor.
No, he won't.
Care?
Probably not.
Yeah.
But that is very telling to me that he's running around the state and talking about, it's called Startup New York now. It used to be called Tax-Free New York. Maybe tax-free isn't the message that he really wants to send, so they rebranded it. Startup is a lot more friendly, I guess, from a marketing standpoint. But he's running around touting that as a big accomplishment because he knows that in upstate, it's the economy that matters and not necessarily these other things.
Now, in all of this, Liz Benjamin, his numbers have dropped.
That's true.
His popularity numbers. What's that about?
Well, you could argue that he was too high. They were artificially inflated, particularly among Republicans. The guy's a Democrat. You know, he may be fiscally conservative, and he may have done a lot of things that Republicans liked in the first 2 years and the business community liked, and independents, which are a swing in the middle, of course, and they're very important, small-I independents. But at the end of the day, he made a left turn this year with the Women's Equality Act and with marijuana law reform, which didn't go anywhere, and with campaign finance reform, which also didn't go anywhere. None of that went anywhere. But he did give a lot of voice to that. And I think the SAFE Act really hurt him, the gun control bill, with the conservatives and the Republicans, and maybe even some independents, too, libertarian-type people who don't think the government has any business legislating that sort of thing. I know how you feel about that, Alan. So, But I think it was a course correction, one might argue. And now he's back to well above 50, which is really sort of the magic point for poll numbers.
It is.
He still certainly has strong enough numbers, and his reelect is okay. You know, and again, no one's really challenging him at this point. No one of particular merit. You would have to be somebody with a lot of money or a lot of means to raise a lot of money. I mean, it's difficult to see now who that person might be. It's not going to be Carlo Palladino, I can tell you that.
So let me ask you this. We've talked about the campaign finance thing. We've talked about the Moreland Act Commission.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about Albany corruption.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the Women's Equality Act.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about casinos upstate. And we've talked about tax-free zones. Has he got too much out there? That's the question. I mean, one of the raps against Andrew Cuomo is that he's reactive, that something happens on the TV one night and he says, let's fix that. And that's, I think, how he got into trouble on the gun stuff, although I very much approved of it.
Yeah.
You know, that he saw it. And he said, OK, I want to beat everybody to the punch. And he comes up with this very strong SAFE Act. And he turns around and guess what? Nobody's behind him.
Well, some people were behind him.
I don't mean in New York State. I mean other states.
Oh,
you saw Connecticut.
He had, right. Yeah. Well, they had a much more measured process, certainly.
Sure.
And a much more public process. You know, it was a little bit of a scattershot approach this year on policy, unlike the first year, which was very directed because he had a number of campaign pledges to make good on. And he really did three things out of the gate. You know, he wanted the property tax cap, he wanted ethics reform, and now I'm blanking on whatever the third one was. But he was very hard on those three things. Then it was gay marriage at the end of the session. And it was very much about also passing the budget on time without raising taxes and fixing the fiscal problems that the state has. And, you know, in year two, it was more of the same. He did say we're going to focus on the economy, but then we had Sandy. And we had Irene and Lee, and we had a lot of issues, and he had to do that. And certainly, he is never stronger than when he's in a crisis and responding to a crisis. He's very good at that. He's very strong at that. And he was at HUD, and so housing and development, urban development.
But he's got to be looking at if Hillary Clinton doesn't run for president. Now, we assume she is. But if she doesn't run for president, he's back in the game. He's got to go into a convention and say, somehow you kept the Republicans in control of the New York State Senate, something I truly believe he did.
Mm.
And you've been a fairly conservative guy, at least your first 2 years. And you put it this way. You said he turned left,
mm-hmm.
which he did.
Mm-hmm.
So he has got to make up his mind what he is.
Yeah. Well, he'll tell you he's fiscally conservative and progressive on social issues. And that is a centrist. And Bill Clinton was a centrist.
Who he considers to be his mentor.
A big mentor.
We hear about it all the time.
Mm-hmm. A big mentor. So I'm sure we'll see more. The next year will be very telling. It'll be the first time he runs on an actual record. You know, he'll run for re-election and he'll have to defend all that he did and all that he didn't do and the way that he did what he did. And he didn't have to do that because he was attorney general. And everybody loves the attorney general because that person is the champion of the people. And we'll see.
Liz Benjamin, we love having you with us. It is a delight, and it's a real treat for me personally to have you here. We are out of time. Our guest has been Liz Benjamin, host of Capital Tonight. Liz, thanks so much for joining us, and we hope to see you on YNN and to read your blog and to watch your phenomenal progress as you prove yourself once again the best of the best. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.